The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You are joining We the People Radio with Aaron Ryan.
Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin. Almost thwarted you there.
Yeah, almost didn't make it there.
We are here live every Sunday from noon to 2 on KCNR, and then this program will air again in Philadelphia and on the Jersey Shore, actually, at WNJC from 1 to 3 on Mondays. So if you have friends on the East Coast, they can listen to us, too.
Good old,
and of course,
good old Jersey Shore.
The good old Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
Bill got to go to New Jersey once.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah, no comment.
Actually, it was in Connecticut, and they were really rude to him. It was super fun.
Oh, yeah. Connecticut was a different story. Whoa.
I told them they weren't like here.
No.
Fun, though. Anyway, let's see. We've got two really good guests for you today. We have Ambassador Francis Rooney. He was the ambassador to the Vatican, 2005 to 2008. Am I right, Mr. Ambassador?
Yeah.
Good, because my computer won't come up, so I'm trying to remember. And your book is terrific, but could you tell everyone the name?
The Global Vatican.
Yeah, that's it. I knew it was something about the Vatican. I'm terrible. I had it all ready to go, and then the internet here wouldn't connect, and now it blew out all my pages. Let's see. Here we go. I've got you. But you were really important for us this week because we really, I mean, I don't know if it's just misreporting or if it's, I haven't done enough digging, but the Pope's been saying some stuff that's making people freak out.
Well, he's definitely saying some controversial things. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, we thought
we
should.
It's going to be a very interesting week here in the United States.
That's what we thought. So we thought we should get a professional insider to give us the scoop on this. Where would you like to start?
Well, who knows? I mean, you know, he came out with that encyclical about, you know, in the environment, which made some I think fairly controversial leaps of logic, if you will.
And for people,
and I don't know if he's going to revisit that when he's here or not. Well, I think he will.
For people who don't know what an encyclical is, maybe you could give them the rundown on why that's an important thing.
Yeah, an encyclical is a papal letter. It expresses the Pope's opinion about certain things. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's, you know, dogma or theology. It's just the Pope's opinion about certain things. In this case, he wrote about the environment and the impact of global warming in the world, and made some analogies or some connections between global warming and poverty. And it's, you know, I think that's kind of controversial.
Yeah, because maybe go a little further into what his connections were. You know, what types of things he was drawing.
Yeah, he basically linked consumption in the West with environmental degradation, which, okay, there's some links to that, with poverty in the third world, i.e. that because we consume so much, they are poor. And I don't know that that's really the right conclusion to draw from consumption in the West. I would have much rather seen the Pope call out some of the bad governments that have deprived their people the opportunity to rise up and achieve their God-given talents than to blame their poverty on global, on environmental degradation and the consuming of fossil fuels by the West. I mean, you know, look at Zimbabwe. They were self-sufficient in food until Mugabe took over, and now they're not. You know, you look at Nigeria and Venezuela, they have wasted billions of dollars of oil revenues, and their people are just as destitute now as they were before, maybe worse.
Well, and I don't understand what did he base it on? Because I've read a few things about some of the people advising him, and that they were basically lefty operatives, I guess for lack of a better term.
Well, they didn't accept any testimony at the Pontifical Council for Social Sciences from anyone that disagreed with them, which I think is a bit of a mistake. You know, I mean, if you're doing a study, you want to have all sides heard, even if you're going to whitewash it so that you can be ostensibly objective, right?
Yeah, so you can at least pretend like you tried.
Yeah, right. And the conclusion that because the Western world is pursuing technology and developing economies, et cetera, that's a negative for the undeveloped world, I don't know that I buy that. I think the problem with the undeveloped world is they have bad governments that have wasted their money and not created an opportunity for them to do the same thing.
Sure. And I know in one of your statements, I pulled it across and posted it online. I guess we should tell people about that. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us, and I finally put a chat link on the page. Sorry about that. But on there, I did post three statements that you made that Stephen forwarded to me, and one was that the Pope shouldn't cast the climate change debate as rich countries versus poor. The greatest environmental harm, worst emissions, and worst clear-cutting of forests for timber and fuel are occurring in the poorer and less developed countries that lack even the most basic environmental standards. And I think we all know that, don't we?
They're going to consume fuel to stay warm and cook their food. And they're going to consume whatever they can get the cheapest way to survive. And it's incumbent on us to urge these countries to, create good economies, to create stability for their people, rule of law that allow maybe a middle class to grow, and then they can afford something decent like natural gas.
Sure. And those guys, you know, when you look at some of these countries, I think that the assumption that's made is that because they have less than we do, their life is somehow simpler and closer to the land, and they're saving the environment more than we are. Was that their premise, do you think?
If that's their premise, they're wildly mistaken. They should go down to the jungles of Brazil and Peru and see the way the people live and ask themselves, do I want to do that or would I rather be in New York City?
Exactly. We'll even look at developed countries. Look at China. You know, they wear masks all day.
I mean, that's where I'm a little bit confused is I think in the last 20 years, the United States has really kind of led the way with a lot of this environmentalism. And yet he feels the need to come here and tell us we need to do more, or is he more just pointing out that China and some of these other countries need to do more? I'm confused.
I don't know. It seems to kind of point at us all the time.
It does.
He did. He pointed at the developed West, which is kind of hard to escape the fact that that's us and Northern Europe. And I think it's unfortunate because, you know, it's totally impractical to assume that people aren't going to consume the cheapest fuel they can get. So it's incumbent on anyone that wants to reduce fossil fuel emissions to stimulate economic conditions where people can afford a better fuel. You know, and the Bush administration, they worked hard to get China to adopt clean coal technologies, scrubbing technologies to clean up their coal. And from what I understand, it's actually had some positive effects, even though there's still a lot of emissions in China, as everybody knows. But you've got to be practical about this stuff, and you try to clean it up as you move to, you know, kind of up Pavlov's hierarchy of needs.
Sure.
You move up to cleaner fuels like natural gas and with a little bit of complement of alternative energy thrown in there.
Sure, but they have to be able to eat first. You know,
I mean, if you're drowning, you're not asking what color's the rope.
Yeah. That's a good one. Well, so when the Pope issues these encyclicals, what does that mean? What does that mean for everybody else? Like, because I always feel that when we talk about this subject, people think we're just talking about Catholics, but I thought that was really the point of your book, is that it affects everybody because, well, he's the leader of a country. You know, the Vatican's considered its own country, and he's a heavyweight player. I mean, the Pope is no small player on the stage.
The Holy See's influence in the world goes well beyond the Catholic Church. It's an influence diplomatically and based around fundamental human principles that affects all mankind, and their ability to weigh in on the side of human dignity and freedom in a way that perhaps secular countries sometimes cannot do. So, it's a broad-based diplomatic platform, and I think they've done some great things. Even recently, this Pope has shown the ability of the Holy See to be impactful with his Cuba mediations. Even if you would disagree with the president's bargain with Cuba, and I kind of do in some areas, the fact that the Holy See could play this unique convening role clandestinely, bringing the parties together, and then not take credit for it. You know, the Pope said, we did almost nothing. Well, that's a very humble answer to something that they were deeply involved in and orchestrating in both in Canada and in the Rome.
Well, it's kind of, you know, and for people who might have missed it, Pope John Paul II had a huge role in bringing down the wall. He was very, very active with all that. But again, that was his country, Poland. You know, he not where the wall was, but I mean that negotiation, that was his neck of the woods, I guess, as you say. And it seems like this Pope is using his experience from Argentina to focus. I mean, I get it. It's where you come from, and it does shape your view. But it seems that all of a sudden it's like he thinks that if we all lived like they did in a third world country, we'd all be better off somehow.
Well, I think his Argentine perspective colors a lot of things, particularly his view about social justice and economics and capitalism. And I'm kind of hopeful that he comes to the United States and he meets a lot of people and he sees people in the streets and realizes that we have a much more broader economic base. We have a middle class. We have a safety net. That our system of capitalism has functioned in a way that he can hardly imagine until he learns about it. Because the one he knows about is so corrupt, so oligarchical.
Oh, that's true.
And tied in with cronyism with the state, that when he looks at a corporation, he sees something negative. Where we look at a corporation, we say, okay, it's a company could be a company running a dry cleaner, or it could be IBM, you know, so what?
And do you think this is why he has his opinions on the whole global warming issue? Because I'm not real sure where he gets his information. I mean, if you want to back it up a little bit more, the whole global warming debate.
It's got to be the guys that advise him.
Yeah, I mean, where does he get his information
because we better take a really quick break or we'll be... We'll have all three breaks in the last half hour, which is always a drag. Yeah, when we come back, I'd like to know what you think or what you know, or what you suspect even, because we're on the outside looking in. We're speaking with Ambassador Francis Rooney, former ambassador to the Holy See from 2005 to 2008, giving us a little insight on the Pope's visit this week and kind of the ideas there. You can find us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Angry, don't you, Bob? It's just a dying planet. That's us killing it one leaf at a time.
rainbows and unicorns.
So my question again was, who's doing it? Yeah, who advises him on this on his global warming stance? I mean, I think a lot of us still have an issue or a problem with the degree that man is actually responsible for warming, and it's not just a cycle.
Yeah, I think that's the first leap of faith that the encyclical made, was to extrapolate from CO2 emissions a conclusion that that's what causes global warming. I think the science is
exactly
more in dispute, you know, than the encyclical would admit. And then the next great leap of faith, of course, is to go from climate change to blaming the industrial world for poverty as a result of it. And I just don't buy it. I go back to what I said before. It's about bad governments that don't create an environment for people to rise up, that are responsible for their own poverty. But no one wants to be responsible for their own consequences anymore.
Yeah, true. It's got to be somebody else's.
That's the bottom line.
It's got to be somebody else's fault. Well, there's a guy. He wasn't the person I was thinking about in a quick search there during the break. I found John Schellenhuber, some German professor, mm-hmm. and I guess he's the chief climate change advisor. But everything I've read says the guy doesn't even believe in God.
No, he's an atheist, and it was disappointing to me that they didn't take testimony from anyone that disagreed with him.
The atheist guy is, I mean, I thought, okay, I've found this in enough places, it's got to have some shred of truth. Seriously, was he a major advisor?
Yeah, he was. He was, and they didn't take, there were people that wanted to testify. Exxon wanted to testify, you know, and I'm surprised that they weren't willing to hear some other voices, like we talked about earlier, even if it's just to create the appearance of empiricism,
yeah,
and open-mindedness. But the guy that ran that program, I think, is a guy, Cardinal Turkson, who's from Ghana. So the whole perspective of the encyclical is from a less developed nation seeking to blame the industrialized world for their fate.
Hmm. And I know you can't, you know, read their minds or anything, but just, I mean, what's the point of putting something like that out? You know, is he trying to make us, I don't know, like,
feel better,
you know,
about?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, what?
I have a feeling that this environmental issue is not the most central aspect of the Pope's personal experience and his most deep-seated beliefs. I don't know how it got to this point. I think his most deep-seated beliefs focus around service to the poor and trying to help to protect the marginalized and underprivileged in the world, which is totally defensible.
Absolutely, and that's his job.
And that's really where he, I don't know, I shouldn't say it's where he should be teaching, but I don't understand how the global warming issue became top shelf in his mind when we have all these other issues with humanity.
Well, we have Christians being, you know, massacred by the thousands, tens of thousands.
I always thought that was like the number one priority was humanity and not political.
Well, you'd think it'd be pretty far down the food chain, especially since the impacts of global warming are attenuated and subject to debate, whereas persecution of Christians, the exodus of migrants from Syria, Iraq, and Africa, and those are here and now. Those are real life tragedies that are taking place before our eyes where the Pope, you know, can really weigh in and exercise moral authority.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I would be much, I guess, I don't know, I'd be much happier to see him stay in that realm, I guess.
Well, there's so much to be done there. I mean, especially in today's times, there's just so much to be done.
Well, I don't think Christians have ever been this much under the gun, literally, in our lifetime.
Right. Well, not in our lifetime, but...
I mean, historically, yes. In our mm-hmm. lifetime, though, I don't think so. What about, have you read the list of the cast of characters that Obama has?
I'm glad you brought that up.
Lined out for him to meet when he gets there?
Yeah, you know, there's something in the Bible, I think, where it says you reap what you sow. And, you know, the Pope's coming over here, and he's going to go see Obama. and you're going to get what you pay for there. I mean, he's going to do to the Pope now what he did to Notre Dame when he spoke there and use Notre Dame as a forum to pursue his own views and took advantage of Notre Dame. And as he tried to do when he went to see the Pope last March, although I thought the Pope did a pretty good job there of containing the damage and in getting his own message out.
What happened last March? I totally forget.
Well, that's when Obama went and met with Pope Francis in Rome, and they put out a press release saying what the meeting had been about before the meeting took place.
That's right. I forgot about that. So many bad things they do these days, I lose track.
Yeah.
I guess I just that well, just got
I scuttled. I think with this cast of characters that he's lined up for the Pope is just it's really an insult, and I man, I was shocked when I heard about it. It's like just a slap in the face for Christianity and for Catholicism. It's kind of like
well, just for Americans. I mean, what the heck? We're talking about a really small group of people in our country. So let's see. The article says, because I hate to misquote, especially when we have this kind of list. In a stunning show of political indecorum, Obama has invited a series of individuals who publicly flout Catholic teaching, including a pro-abortion religious sister, or a nun, a transgender woman, the first openly gay Episcopal bishop, along with at least two Catholic gay activists. And I think it goes into further detail. I should post the article. But I mean, what the heck? So has the Pope ever said anything about all that stuff?
Nothing I know of. And he probably won't.
No, he
He'll
won't.
Just smile,
you know, he's
smile
got,
and
he's
nod.
Got too much class to ever say anything about it. But
the way I look at it is, he put his neck in the noose.
True.
You know, he's coming over here. He's going to the White House. What do you expect? Obama's done that. President Obama's done that to everybody. It's all Chicago politics about everything and pursuing a very aggressive liberal agenda on social issues, on economics, on punishing corporations, on trying to attack the free enterprise system. It's a broad-based assault on the historic way America has operated.
Right. And I'm confused on his stance on the gay issue too. He said some things just recently. Where do you think he's going with that?
Well, I think the Pope. I can understand what the Pope's saying there. Okay, the Pope's saying, look, we're a church. A church needs to be in the business of forgiveness, in the business of embracing people, and trying to make people feel as good as they can about the circumstances that they're in. That's what you go to a church for, that, right?
Sure.
So he's saying you may hate the sin, but you don't hate the sinner. And I don't have any problem with that. I mean, I think
that's perfectly fine. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
But now he's going to be used as a political football by Obama, and that's just...
I agree with you. I think he's setting himself up for some bad stuff coming down the road. I mean... I think you're going to... I mean, what's going to happen when they want to do a gay marriage in a Catholic church?
Yeah, that's where some of the rubber's going to meet the road, and you're starting to see some of that now, where you're seeing people say, wow, you know, we can't practice our faith and be involved in the government, for example. Where
right.
We can't, you know,
and that's really what the government's saying has to happen now. And no one's... Yeah. I think no one's pushed that button, but it's coming. I really believe it's coming.
Well, they have not shown any bounds yet in pursuing their agenda.
No.
They're starting with the civil, and they're starting with trouncing on the intersection of the First Amendment and the civil with the reproductive business.
Right.
And who knows how far they'll try to get.
Right.
I think this next year until January of 2017 is going to be a scary time.
Sure. And, you know, I said Catholic Church. I think any church.
We can see almost anything.
Someone's going to stand up and say no, and the fight's going to be on, because I think that's exactly what they're setting up here, is for a confrontation.
Sure. So we can run it by the Supreme Court, who's had about a 50-50 record. That'll be a scary place to go.
Yeah.
Bob, what do you think? A little break? All right, need to take a break. Thank our advertisers. We're on here with Ambassador Francis Rooney. He was ambassador to the Vatican, the Holy See, from 2005 to 2008. We always have him come on and we pick his brain about what's going on with the Pope. And the Lord knows this week is going to be all about the Pope. So we'll be just a little bit ahead of the game. If you have questions or comments, you can give us a call or you can go online, wethepeopleradio.us, chat room's open. Fire us a question in there, we'd be happy to ask it for you. Be right back. That's a big topic these days. When you start talking about the Pope taking extreme positions, it pushes people right to the wall. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We're here with Francis Rooney, served as the ambassador to the Holy See under George W. Bush from 2005 to 2008. And you're the CEO of Rooney Holdings. So that's your day job now?
That's my day job. I work for my kids.
I was like, did we lose him? He's like, I don't want to get into this whole transvestite thing.
Work for your kids. That's a good job to have.
We'll gloss over the transvestite.
We have all three kids in the businesses, and so I work for them.
Right on.
Good for you.
That's cool. You know, I think we don't actually discuss the music before we start the program, but that one brings up an interesting topic. I mean, when the Pope starts taking these really hardcore political views, really all these things are hardcore left political views, that pushes people when it comes to the church.
Yeah, but you know, he's a really complex guy. I mean, he's also said a lot of things that go the other way. I mean, he's been very clear for many years in opposing the authoritarian regimes in Argentina. And
true.
He's leaned forward quite a bit at personal risk to do that against the Videla government and against Kirchner. And then, you know, he's spoken up a great deal against the idea of socialism and communism as not being the answer either, because they take away individual freedom and replace it by the state. So, you know, the guy's kind of a mixed bag in what he thinks.
Has anybody else been this, I don't know, I guess controversial?
Well, he has been more, forward-leaning and casual in his comments, you know, than previous popes who have been more nuanced and diplomatic. I mean, when he was in Bolivia and he said, "This economy kills," that was a fairly dramatic statement.
Yeah,
talking about capitalism.
Sure.
Yeah, and I wonder if you know, early on, if he must have realized that his comments really reverberate. I mean, they have a huge impact on people. And after a couple of them, I would have thought that some of that would have, I don't know, not necessarily toned it down, but...
He's kind of like Donald Trump right now. He's like the Donald Trump of religion.
he has unleashed some pretty strong language, and that Laudato Si, the encyclical, has some pretty strong language in it too. And so I'll be interested to see when he comes here if he's more nuanced than he was in Bolivia, Ecuador, and Paraguay when he's here on the big stage. You know, I mean, those are little stages, and he's looking at economic systems which are moribund, don't provide for their people. And again, about which he should express frustration. We'll see what he does when he's here in the middle of the one economic and social system that has provided more good to more people than any other one ever devised. Let's see what he does. It'll be interesting, won't it?
Yeah. Sure, because, you know, honestly, without our aid around the world in both food and in actual money, a lot of these guys would be toast.
Well, it's true. You know, whenever there's a major disaster or some conflict around the world, who's the first one to step up and provide aid? And everybody looks to the United States to do exactly that. But that's not really taken into consideration sometimes, I think.
No, and you could make an argument that we may do things that we don't need to do as well.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I think it's great that we're the leader in humanitarian aid, but, you know, all great powers that have become non-great powers, when you look back at them and you say, wow, they outspent their patrimony. And I do think that the United States needs to pay attention to our patrimony.
Oh, yeah.
Well, especially in the last 6 years, 6 or 7 years. I mean, we have absolutely put our foot where it doesn't belong on several occasions and done things that have really shined poorly on us, which might,
well, besides the fact
be
that
why he's doing what he's doing.
We have people here who need some help too.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we can't always save the entire world.
Yeah, we would do wise to study England up to the First World War.
And how so?
Well, England was the preeminent world power. They were deployed actively all around the world, spending money, trying to maintain colonies, and dispersing their patrimony. And at the end of the day, it didn't do them any good because they sacrificed their internal economy, and Germany rose up, and that was the end of them. It's been the United States ever since.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see a... what's the word I'm looking for? What's going on with the refugees today? Do you think that's similar to what happened early on before World War II and what happened with the Jews, leaving their lands and being rejected basically throughout the world? Same kind of things happening with the refugees today. Is there similarities? Do you see any similarities there?
Well, I definitely think that refugee is refugee for one reason or another, but I think the causes are totally different. I mean, Hitler was trying to exterminate those poor people,
yes.
Whereas here they're in an area of just very difficult internal civil war. But once you get beyond the root cause, you're still talking a refugee is a refugee, and they're trying to flee to find a better life, and it's very unfortunate. And it's going to create a lot of hardships on other countries, like in Europe, that aren't all that well equipped to deal with it either. One of the things that Saudi Arabia has said, perhaps controversially, is they said we should set up camps in Syria and in Iraq and establish no-fly zones so that the refugees can be cared for there, like a safe zone areas for them, so they don't have to leave their homeland.
Right.
And that we can wait this thing out until ultimately some resolution occurs with Bashar.
Well, I appreciate you recognizing them as refugees and not immigrants. It kind of bugs me when I hear the news constantly referring to these folks as immigrants. They wouldn't be leaving their homeland if they had a choice.
Yeah, but there's also kind of a spooky element to that too, because if you watch any of the video footage of who's running, you know, running along, and I get if you're young and healthy, you're going to be the runners, but it's all that 20-something men
Well, that was
young,
that was
young
that's
men
an interesting
in their 20s,
point because,
and they said, you know, hey, watch out who's hiding in the refugee ranks.
But if you look at the news today versus a couple of weeks ago, that's what you saw was the 20-something males in the majority of who was, you know, fleeing, and since the light was kind of shined on that, now if you watch the news, now
it's
you're
all
seeing
little kids.
It's women and children.
Yeah,
and I think there was a lot of women and children in the beginning too, but it's really how the media wants to put a spin on it, and I think they recognize that.
Yeah, because it brings up it's a concern. Can't just have
it's a human tragedy on all sides. I mean, in these countries like Hungary and Croatia and Slovenia and Slovakia, they're having enough trouble as it is trying to figure out how to provide for their own people, and now they have these problems put on top of them. There's just no good answer to this situation other than finding some kind of way to create stability in Syria and Iraq. Whether you carve out a piece of Syria and Iraq and say, okay, refugees, this is your place, kind of like the Kurds have basically become autonomous, even though the UN doesn't recognize them that way. You know, I don't know what the answer is, but I know that it would be better for the people to stay in their home country if they could be there and have the opportunity.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Don't you think that the Pope would be a little better off addressing that issue as a priority over the global warming issue?
I do.
Yeah, because
I think he'd be better off addressing radical Islam, addressing migrants and refugees, addressing corrupt governments like Zimbabwe that create environments where their people are enslaved. That's what I'd like to see the Pope doing.
Right. And typically that's always where they've kind of operated, is in those hard-hit areas.
Because there was a question in the chat said, you know, why is he so political when there are major problems in the fallout of Catholics from the church?
Yeah, I've read some things in Spanish from some of my friends in Latin America who are severely upset about the Pope's activities because they're saying, look, the Pope is supporting Correa in Ecuador and Morales in Bolivia and undermining what little stability we have in making life more difficult for people that are trying to, you know, build up institutions and fight the autocrats.
And why do you think he's doing that? Just bad advice?
Well, you know, I don't know. He's a very complex guy. I think he doesn't trust elites. In Latin America, elite is a term of art. That's like the people that have everything. And there's only two kinds of people in Latin America, the elites and the poor.
Yeah, there is no middle
totally
class.
Different than what we are.
Sure.
And so I think he doesn't trust the elites, and he looks at them as people who have worked with the government to gain things, material things, etc., at the expense of the poor, and that they don't really provide for the poor. And he's probably right in all that in Latin America, but he's not right in that in the United States or Europe.
Well, he probably sees mostly all of us as elites here. I mean, if you're looking at standard of living.
Yeah, maybe in principle, but that's what I hope looks around when he's traveling around, and he's not seeing slums. He's seeing middle-class people in homes and people that are standing there looking at him that are, you know, have clothes. And, you know, I hope he gets to talk to enough people and realize that there's all kinds of people that are educated and working in this country, building this country up of all socioeconomic levels. That would be a radical departure from his experience.
Yeah, because there's opportunity, and where he, true, the places that he is drawing his reference, they don't have opportunity.
Well,
I mean, you're
and
really
to be fair to him, that's his past experience in his life. That's
you're,
what he's
you're
seeing.
Kind of born into poverty, and that's the end of the show for you.
Right.
See, Pope Benedict and Pope Francis both knew a lot about the United States, which is very helpful.
That's true. I didn't really think about that. And Pope Francis really has very little, if any, experience. My chat room person here says, ask about the falling Catholic attendance. And I know you're not the spokesperson for the church, but have popes in the past, I guess you've kind of looked at the history more than we have, Do they typically talk about that, the rise and fall of the number of Catholics in the world, the number of participating Catholics? Or is that just something that's kind of dealt with under the...
This Pope hasn't spoken about it that much, but I know Pope Benedict did. Pope Benedict spoke a lot about the idea of secularism in the Western world, that people are more interested in things than they are ideas, and that their attenuation with God has corresponded with a increased focus on material things and their personal lives. And he extrapolated from that some conclusions about what could happen to justice and civility in the world when people lose their religion. This Pope, I don't think, has weighed in that much on that. He has spoken a little bit about what he called materialism, which is the same basic idea.
Yeah, but it's interesting because here, you know, with all this push, we have such a small group of people who are atheist or transgender or all these just microscopically small groups. And yet, if you looked at, if you just, you know, came from outer space and landed on the United States, you'd think that was everybody. There are just so many things.
It happens that they're aligned with the media.
Exactly. And it's stripping away that faith base. And then you look at the persecution around the world, and I guess it just bugs me desperately that the Pope isn't really attacking that, trying hard to, you know, to highlight that. He has the platform for it. Who knows? Maybe having everything shoved in his face when he comes here. maybe that actually is a good thing for all of us.
At least it's historic that a Pope speaking to the joint session of Congress. I don't know how it's going to go. I'm really looking forward to being there and to hearing it. But at the very least, the fact that John Boehner invited him and that he's coming shows that the Holy See is a force to be reckoned with in the world.
Yeah, and a lot of people they don't feel like that's appropriate. It's very interesting how many people don't actually realize that the Vatican is a country.
A head of state, yeah.
Yeah, a head of state. Yeah. And so it's like, well, he has no business being there. It's all about religion. I hear this from people. And so I'm very curious to see what is said and how it winds up being portrayed. We need to take one last quick break, and we're going to come back with Ambassador Francis Rooney. There was a comment before, just to mull over, Mr. Ambassador, that somebody had said the Jesuits kind of act like elites, and since he's a Jesuit, isn't he kind of pointing the finger at himself? if you have any thoughts on that, we'll take it on the other side. Okay. You can catch us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Sinners are much more fun. You know that only the good die young. Oh, baby.
Is that going to be the theme song from the White House? Are we blasting that? Oh, that would be a little too far. Bridge too far. But, you know, everything else is a bridge too far, so why not? Okay, so lots of ways we can go, but I'm kind of curious with you in our final minutes. What do you think about the whole Planned Parenthood thing from the Pope's perspective? Do you think he'll say anything? Is that something he would know about or weigh in on?
I think he's going to be at 30,000 feet. I'd be real surprised if he gets into any kind of real detail of political issues in the United States. I mean, he's a global leader, and I think he's going to want to project himself as that. Anything could happen with this guy, but I would be real surprised if he jumped into any more granular issue than to speak broadly about immigration reform. And
yeah, I just wondered, since it's so much the debate in Congress right now, I wondered, and since it was a life issue.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if he dug into that. his perspective is so global, you know. I mean, here in the United States, and we look at Washington, D.C. as the center of the universe, but to him, I think he's looking at things much broader than that. He might not even know what Planned Parenthood is.
Yeah, know? I was just curious, and if it wasn't a right to life issue, I guess I wouldn't think he would know about it. But and I'm also interested to know, do you think he'll say anything about the, you know, the whole ISIS thing and the persecution and of Christians around the world and all that? I think he'll weigh in on any of those.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he did say something about the persecution of Christians and link it to refugees and the whole destabilization of the Middle East, which he's spoken up quite a bit about that. That would be helpful if he were to do that too.
Oh, I think.
Well,
it would
yeah.
Be too. Absolutely.
What's okay? So then my last one on my mental list here. What about Iran? Think he'll pipe up on that?
I don't think he will. I don't think he'll get into the Iran thing. I think from his point of view, the problems are not Iran. The problems are Syria, Iraq, where people are being killed and wounded and turned into refugees and things like that. To us, we feel Iran is a totally different situation, but. You know, we're not looking at, we're looking at more of a strategic situation of the impact of Iran in supporting terrorism and in undermining the historic Sunni hegemony in the Middle East. But I don't think for him that's a big deal.
Just curious. I don't know. I always wonder if he'll weigh into things that are on their desk, you know, that they're deciding in. And as the ambassador, what does the ambassador do on a deal like this? Like, if you were the ambassador right now, are you helping him, like, write speeches and things like that? Or setting up meetings for him?
If I were the ambassador right now,
yeah,
and George Bush was president,
yeah, that's right. We
got to
switch all that.
I would probably be writing that it would be really helpful for the Pope to speak up against the terrorist activities that Iran is sponsoring with Hezbollah and Hamas and the Houthis in Yemen and things like that, and that he should speak up strongly against the invasion of the Ukraine by Russia and things like that. I'd probably be calling on him to do some of that.
And he's done that in the past. I mean, he's been very vocal about some of that stuff.
Is our ambassador now, whose name I do not know, is our ambassador now that's doing your old job, as it were, would they see things that way?
Well, actually, Ambassador Hackett did exactly that concerning the Ukraine. And after Putin came and met with the Pope and they had some discussions about the humanitarian issues in the Ukraine, I think that Ambassador Hackett issued some comments that were very good, basically to the effect that it would be really helpful if the Pope would also talk about the undermining of the Ukraine's territorial sovereignty by Russia.
Nice. Hey, yeah. We have a question. We've got a... jump off here, but we have a question if you'd be willing to come back after the Pope's visit and help us unravel it.
Sure.
All right. I will be in contact with you.
Well, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me on. Well, thank you very much. Hope you'll have a nice afternoon.
Thank you so much. The week ahead, when the Pope visits, we'll see what happens. You're listening to We the People Radio. We'll be back with Jake McCauley on the Institute of the Institute for the Constitution, sorry, and just in a couple of minutes. WeThePeopleRadio.us. Good afternoon, and welcome back to We the People Radio. Let's see if we can get those headphones on without having an incident here.
No incidents, no incidents.
No incident, yes. So I'm Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
Bob provides all our music.
Let's have an international incident.
Right here in Reading.
Right here in the studio. All right, so we just finished a really fun hour with Ambassador Francis Rooney, and the archive of that will be posted this afternoon with no commercials in it. Sorry, commercial guys. No commercials. If you want to send that to a friend, and the interview with Jake McCauley that we're about to start, that'll be on there as a separate hour with no commercials as well, which is super fun. And we air, let's see, details. We air live Sundays from noon to 2. There's a chat room open during that time. We're on KCNR 1460 AM in California. Then on Mondays, we air as a recording. What do they call it?
On a delayed basis.
Delayed basis. There you go.
That's on radio talk.
On WNJC 1360.
I don't want to call it a replay because it actually is a new program, but it's just delayed.
It's new for them. Yeah. And that's in Philadelphia and New Jersey. So
WNJC.
Kind of fun. So you can always catch us online, wethepeopleradio.us, and we always have the archives up and all the various shows, contact information. If you have ideas for programming, we'd love them. Ideas for sponsorship, like that too. So, there you have it. Back to business. We're here with Jake McCauley. And we've tried to set up this interview like a million times, and things keep happening, and then, I don't know, we finally got him.
Yeah, corralled him.
So, Jake's the Chief Executive Officer of the Institute on the Constitution. It's an educational outreach that presents the founder's American view of law and government. I think most of the people that would listen to this show would say, thank you, finally. They've produced thousands of graduates in all 50 states with a full understanding of the biblical principles on which America's founding documents are based. So take that, lefties. Jake, how's it going?
How's it going, Aaron? Thank you for having me.
You know, all those people out there that are like, our founding documents aren't based on any religious principles. So you're here to make their life hard, aren't you? You just live for that.
I don't know if I live for it, but I don't try to avoid it. Let's put it that way.
You sound like you're far away.
I do.
Hey, there you go. You're
sound
getting
good?
Yep, you're getting closer.
I apologize.
Move that iPhone around.
I'm Well, on the weekends it's very tricky because I travel quite a bit.
Oh, that's good.
The time I'm in North Carolina, and North Carolina hates Sprint, and that's what I use. And I love Sprint personally, but sometimes the reception cannot be so good.
See,
you brought up a good point.
Uh-huh.
About people not wanting to believe the obvious that the foundations of our country, or even the government, the institution of government, has biblical underpinnings. We want to say that it's more of a secular document or an atheistic document. But that's just not true. When the Declaration of Independence, when Jefferson put forth the words and the committee ratified it, it wasn't just him, there was a committee of five men that wrote that document, but he was the main author. He said, "All these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal." That means the presupposition was that there is a creator, God, somebody that created us, and that we were created equal, and that we were endowed by the Creator with certain inalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Therefore, a person who would deny the existence of a God on the biblical basis for the assertions that are put forth in the Declaration of Independence or in our Constitution, if they deny God, then they deny the fact that they have any rights. And we might as well become a dictatorship. It's based on evolution and classes. Certain classes evolve more than others, and there's a powerful class, and that we could all be slaves. But because we have the documents that we have and the government that we have, based on the Christian principle that we are created equal, we have the liberties that we have. So they love the liberty. They just hate the God that gave it to them. That just confuses me.
Doesn't that just sound about right, though?
It is. It's the epitome of confusion.
Yeah, and you know, they've also taken, you know, it's an interesting thing, you know, to pick and choose who is, you know, always who was a Christian and who wasn't, and so was an atheist, and blah, blah, blah. I bet you get that all the time.
Well, I do, but the problem is, and this is what I've found, we do a lot of work with adults, we train legislators, we have a course of instruction at theamericanview.com, and I've been doing this for well over a decade, and a lot of folks wanted to bring that forward, but, you know, our founders were deists, they were atheists, etc. But they don't have any real firm evidence for any of those. And we have concrete evidence through the writings, through the letters, and through the governing documents, through the Constitution, through the Northwest Ordinance, through the Bill of Rights. These men were Christians, and they debated and ratified what was the specific wording and why. Their justification, in other words, the underpinning for the reason that they chose the words that they did or the form of government that we have. They went back to the Bible and said, well, it says in the book of Deuteronomy, or it says in the prophet Isaiah, or Christ says, that's what they were using when they were trying to debate and ratify the Bill of Rights and all of the other documents. So we have that as proof and as evidence. And again, why somebody would want to deny their creator? It's beyond me, because when you do that, you deny your inalienable rights. And if you do that, then why don't we just move to all these other atheistic countries that are across the world that are in poverty or that are third world or that are ran in a very non-freedom-centered society? Why don't we move there? Because this whole thing was just a failure. But it wasn't. That's why they stay here. But again, we want to get rid of the lawgiver because that conflicts with what we want to do. We want to be God. And I find that's kind of the answer that you come down to when people are so brutally honest. They want to determine what's right and wrong, and therefore they want that power, which means that they want to be God.
Yeah.
There are two gods. There is only one God.
Well, okay, so for the we might as well start with the debunking. So for all those people who think that the separation of church and state is part of the Constitution, why don't we just release the beast? If this comes up in your class or whatever, and someone says, "But there's a separation of church and state in the Constitution," how exactly would you put them in their tiny box?
I'm so glad you brought that up, because actually, just like any good lie, and I'm not saying that lying is good, but in order to sell a lie, generally you put a little bit of what in that lie?
Yeah, it's got to have a little truth in it.
A little truth. So there is the phrase, separation of church and state, it does exist, and our founding fathers believed in it very deeply. So the problem was, in England, where the king was, he's the head of the secular government, but he's also the head of the church. It makes it very difficult for freedom of conscience for that matter, or freedom of worship to happen. Because you got this guy with guns and swords that will kill you if you don't worship a certain way. Well, that's tyranny. And that jurisdiction belongs to God. It's called freedom of conscience. And so they wanted the church and the state separate. But if you could picture with me, how long before we have our next break? That's a wonderful analogy. I think we'll really open people's eyes to that.
I don't know. Bob, you want to take an early break or a late break?
We got about 2 minutes.
He says 2 minutes.
We got 2 minutes. Okay, well, I'm going to start with this. We're going to start with a building. It's a building with four walls and, of course, a ceiling. And that structure exists with four walls, four structural walls. God has ordained four government jurisdictions. And I speak of God not as a clerical man with a robe that preaches the Bible to church every Sunday. I speak of God as a minister. And Romans 13 clearly identified these jurisdictions, and he gave one jurisdiction called civil government to his ministers. That word, dikones, or different people say, pronounce it different ways, but that is essentially a translation. It is the same word that we get deacon from. So a governor, most people think of him as a secular individual, but it's not. He's actually a biblical individual that God ordained, and the job of civil government is to protect our God-given rights. You also have family government. Families were ordained because children needed somebody to raise them in the nurture and admonition and fear of the Lord. Then you also have personal government, which is you and I. We choose whether we want to put a seatbelt on, for example, when we get in our car. We choose whether or not to commit crimes. We choose whether or not to commit adultery if we're in marriage. We choose whether or not to steal, lie, etc. And we're beholden to God's laws, which are the Ten Commandments. So that's self-government. And there's family government, because children can't be self-governed. And there's church government. Generally, families get together like they did when they came to our country from Europe. And what was the first building they built? They built a community hall for divine worship services, so they could worship the God who gave them the right for life, liberty, and religious freedom, ultimately, which they were seeking. So that's church government, and that's huge. Generally, in church government, you know what? I'm going to stop right now. I want everybody to get this picture. You have four jurisdictions of government. You have self-government, family, church government, and civil government. And God is on the ceiling, because God is above all of those jurisdictions. He gives them their authority. He built them. Each of those walls or those jurisdictions touches him and goes no higher. They look to him for their source, as their source of authority. He's the ceiling. And that's important for us to understand. Now, when we get back from the next break, I'm going to explain a little bit more of the functions and duties of each of those jurisdictions, and then this will burst the lie of separation of church and state as it's been pitched to us as Americans.
Outstanding. Oh, and you just got unmuffled there right at the end. Say something else, Jake.
I'm still with you.
Hey.
Wow, did nobody get any of that?
No, we did, but you were kind of muffled. Now all of a sudden
muffled. You're
really clear.
Wow. So freeze. Don't move.
I'm not moving. I haven't moved, actually. I'm sorry about that.
No, it's okay.
What I was,
It was just, I could feel people straining to listen. So, no sweat. We'll be right back with Jake McCauley. You're listening to We the People Radio. Please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Give a damn.
Lies, lies, nothing but lies.
But that was the SCOTUS. Oh.
Hey, who are you talking to over there?
I don't know. I was trying to figure out what somebody was saying in the chat room. I thought Bob was still trying out the music. He's been playing the same thing over and over. I was lulled into some, I don't know, imaginary land there.
Yeah.
Why don't you say hi, we're back.
Another universe.
What are your lips glued shut?
I was laughing at you.
I know. I'm over here. I'm like, what? What is this person saying? Oh, my gosh. Well, chaos continues here at We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
In fairness to you, we lost our guest just before we were scheduled to come back. And
yeah, he called. And the phone was ringing. Bob's playing the same song over and over, trying to find where he wants to play it. He started playing it again. I guess I just I was off on my own planet.
Doing that and trying to get the guest back on the air.
Exactly.
At the same time. So, yes, I can understand your confusion.
Oh, you know what happens without actually good reasons. So, Jake, you were going to... Uh-oh. You were going to hang up on us. No. Jake is there?
I think
I'm here.
Hey, there,
oh,
you,
there
are.
You are. Loud and clear.
We had some funky noises there for a second. That weren't me, by the way. That wasn't me that time. Okay, so you're going to hammer home the separation of church and state mythical.
And again, I appreciate you for having me on here, Aaron and Bill, and working through these things. going back to the building analogy, you've got four walls. God ordained four government jurisdictions. Well, people, when they think government, they think civil government or Washington, D.C. But we have the self-government jurisdiction. God created us, and he created Adam in the Garden of Eden, the first man. He created him with inalienable rights, right to life, liberty, and property. And he said, govern yourselves. And how did he expect us to govern ourselves? By his law. That was the Ten Commandments. It's also the basis for English common law, or common law in general, which is what our courts, if you look at Article 7, or not Article 7, but the Seventh Amendment of the Bill of Rights, and all suits at common law, our judges judge by common law, basis for their authority in casting their judgments is found in the Ten Commandments. So he said to us, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, worship one God, do not make any idols, do not take my name in vain, do not lie, etc. So that's your self-governing law. That is where a majority of government is supposed to happen, and does happen. Because he knew that children, when they're born, they need to be raised in the nurture and admonition of the fear of the Lord. He gave that commandment to parents. So you have family government. Families will raise their children that way. Families are also a strong structure. It's the source of all health, education, and welfare. And I say education because parents are responsible to educate their children. It's not the state's job. The state doesn't have any children. The state has never even been pregnant. Although, I realize you all are in California and crazy things happen.
I've never
been pregnant in California.
I was going to say, you know, Jake, you really shouldn't, you shouldn't rule anything out.
Okay. All right. Well, to my knowledge, that has not happened. Therefore, God commanded us to do education, welfare. The home is, let's just put it plainly, every child is a welfare case. We provide for them. We give them their needs. We give them a house. We
and give them transportation, et cetera, et cetera. And the hope is that by the end of us raising them, they will no longer need welfare. And the general welfare clause, of course, is a misconstrued. General welfare means as it applies to us all generally. It was never intended to be specific welfare, where we help certain socioeconomic groups or we help certain demographics over others. It had to be general. It had to affect us all. So that was a little rabbit trail, but I'm coming back to welfare.
No, that's
welfare
okay.
Welfare starts in the home. Welfare starts in the home because when the child is done, now he's going to go to college. In the past, you, Aaron, Bill, Bob, the producer, when you went to college, you probably didn't look to the federal government to give you money to do so. Of course not. It's not its jurisdiction. It's not its boundary of government. It's not its wall, if you will, because we're dealing with walls here. It was the parents. Now, health care. Where do we go when we're sick? As children, we generally go to mother. And mother helps with that sickness. Now, as you get these three jurisdictions, health, education, and welfare, families would come together and kind of contract with each other, if you will. I guess it's not a professional contract, but contract with each other based on our religious views or our values or worshiping God, and communities would be structured around a church. If you ever watch Little House on the Prairie, you know that the kids all went to school at the church. You know that the hospital, when there was a health epidemic or crisis in the town, the hospital was the church. It got converted into a hospital where the sick would come. When the local constable came to town to try a case, they did that at the church. When the town hall meetings were called to get together, they did that at the church. The women's group met at the church. You get what I'm saying here? If you look at hospitals from the 50s and the 40s, they were all named Christian names. St. Jude's is just an example. St. Mary's or the Baptist Hospital. I mean, there's so many different hospitals named after religious institutions because the church collectively, through family government, and then delegated that jurisdiction to themselves collectively in the form of the church. They educated children. Education was run by churches for the longest time. If you look right now, if we call ourselves the Church Universal Christians in general, churches in this country own by far the most real estate out of any other type of group, out of any other corporation. They own the most real estate. They have an opportunity to speak to their constituency on at least a biweekly basis. Most churches do church services twice. Imagine the wealth that's combined with all the congregation members. Church is a powerful institution, but unfortunately it's went to sleep and it's delegated most of its authorities to that fourth wall of government jurisdiction that God ordained. And that's civil government. And the reason he ordained civil government, if you look in Romans 13, Paul spells it out very clearly, and if you read the book of Exodus, you can see it. There was a reason for civil government, that was to execute the justice system, to bear the sword. In other words, if Aaron, you have a real estate transaction, you own a home, and the guy stiffs you for your rent, you don't go to your pastor and ask him to arrest him. You go to a civil magistrate who has delegated authority. That delegated authority, of course, is given by we the people. That was the contract we set. It was the Constitution. We gave certain enumerated powers. And we did not say to them, hey, if we didn't put it in here, you're free to do it. That's how government reads the Constitution now. They tell us, well, you didn't say we couldn't do it, therefore we're going to. They assume that authority. That's not right. Civil government's job was just to execute the justice system and to defend the borders. Because you don't want your pastor to have to raise an army to defend the borders, do you?
True. Well, I don't know. Might do a better job, actually.
I was just going to say that. We can't. Never mind that, okay?
Yeah, that's a bad example. Take that out.
And you don't want to, but it could be the case. You don't want Nancy Pelosi to administer your sacraments. You don't want her baptizing your children.
Yeah, no. If she's in the thing, the answer's no. unless
exactly.
It should she retire, then the answer's yes.
And I'm going to tell you why. Because with those four walls, there's four corners in that house, signifying there's a separation between each wall. The separation between church and state is very clear. Nancy Pelosi doesn't cross over into the church and take control of the church like the King of England did. Our founders didn't want that, and they didn't want the church to have to raise up a posse to defend the borders and administer the justice system. Their job is to administer the sacraments and redemption and the gospel to mankind. Now, a good way to understand this, too, is when Jesus said, do you remember the verse? I love Jesus, first of all. I hope you guys do, too. I hope everybody listening does.
It's Sunday morning. Even if you didn't, you should lie about it.
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't need to, because that's my life right now. I was a counterculture kid, very bad kid. When I was 17, that was when I was converted. It's the only reason I'm on the radio with you today. But I pursue his word very
violently, if you will, in some regards. I'm doing it all the time. I don't let things get in the way of that. But they kind of tricked Jesus, and they said, Jesus, should we pay taxes?
Oh, yeah.
And I know there's a lot of folks that don't like to pay taxes. A lot of people that say that our tax money is being used unjustifiably. A lot of people say that we don't even have money anymore. We have a fiat currency. And a lot of those trails and rabbit trails are correct. But I'm not here to debate that. Jesus said, give me a coin. He's the God of the earth. They think they're going to trick him. I'm so humored by that. And I run into people like this all the time. I'm just humored by it. They want to eliminate God. They say he has nothing to do with it. We don't have to obey him. It's just ludicrous. Try not to obey gravity and jump out of a plane. God created certain laws. You know, there's ramifications for it. But Jesus said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. So he legitimized, he validated that government jurisdiction, that wall, if you will, in our house. And then he said, render unto God what Caesar doesn't want. Is that how that verse goes?
Say it again?
Render unto God what Caesar doesn't want.
No. I was like, wait a second, I don't think it was that long.
I've never heard that.
yeah, it wasn't that
exactly.
long.
Because he didn't say that. He said, render unto God.
Yeah.
So he limited Caesar's jurisdiction. He said God has a jurisdiction separate from him. And that's why I said God goes on the ceiling. He's above everything. Every one of those jurisdictions puts him. I'm accountable to God as an individual. My family is accountable to God as a family. The church is definitely accountable to God to preach the word. And civil government is accountable to God to defend our God-given right. So the only separation that exists is between the jurisdictional boundaries of a church and a state. There is no separation between God and government. Matter of fact, government derives its legitimacy and its authority to bear the sword only because God gave it that authority. And government can only exist through the consent of the governed. So if government tries to get up on the ceiling and become God and tell churches they have to marry two men, if government gets up on the ceiling and tells families what they can and can't educate their kids with, if government gets up on the ceiling and tries to tell the individual he's got to buckle his seatbelt, or he's got to wear a bicycle helmet, or a motorcycle helmet, he's no longer in his jurisdiction. Therefore, as the Declaration of Independence says, the king is no longer fit to be a ruler of a free people. And our duty, it's not just our right, it's our duty, it says in the Declaration of Independence, to throw off such governments and to place new guards in government over us. And so that, in a nutshell, is the separation theory. And I think even an atheist would be very happy to know that the government can't force him to worship Jesus. And he'd be very happy to know that the church would not get involved and force him to worship Jesus either, but that his individual God-given rights are protected by government. But that does not give him the right to break self-government laws. Because what you're seeing today, government is being used as an instrument to create anarchy in a lot of ways. This government has said it is God, and that's the pagan view of who God is. Does that all make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense. And yet, and this really isn't, I mean, the Constitution's as documents go, it's a small document. It's short.
Right. Take 20 minutes to read it.
Yeah, so how is it that people can keep asserting that there is this mythical, you know, separation of church and state? How is it that we can't, why can't we kill it?
Well, it's, I believe it was Mark Twain, but there was Joshua Billings, I think, made the statement. He said, it ain't what a man don't know that hurts him. I'm kind of paraphrasing this.
Uh-huh.
It's what he knows for sure. It just ain't so. So we know for sure the separation of church and state. That means we're supposed to keep God out of everything. But it just ain't so.
Yeah.
So we become zealots for something that's a legal fiction. It's non-existent. And this goes back to the foundation. John Adams said that our Constitution, it's a great document, but it's a piece of paper. But then I looked at the Constitution. I used to live in D.C. area, and I would go down to the archives building. It's my favorite building. I would look at the Declaration. I would show my children. My children have the Bill of Rights memorized, many of them. And we would look at this original document. It was just a piece of paper, and that's all it was. Bill, unless we enforce that, unless we stand and enforce it, that's all it's going to be. And so when people have the wrong understanding of what it is, they become zealous for what's wrong, and ultimately, I don't know if you read the book by Frederick Bastiat, it's called The Law. The law
uses the law against the law, if you will. They use force against the law. So now if our law says that gravity is illegal, this is just an example of how we can't change fixed standards of what God gave. William Blackstone said that the only way that a municipal law can be enacted, and Blackstone is who our founders depended upon when they brought up the concept of law and what law was and what government could do in jurisdiction, he said that it has to square with the laws of nature and nature's God. And that's written in the Declaration of Independence. That's where we asserted our rights. The law of nature, nature's God.
And yet, the more we take God out of, you know, they take it out of the courthouses, they take it out of the schools, they take it, the worse things are getting. We are going backwards, it seems like. The more we rule that way.
Well, and it's not helping our kids or our schools.
Well, there's no baseline anymore.
Yeah, there's no common decency, because that used to flow from morality. Right. And now that morality is a dirty word, you know, we can't talk about it. We need to take another quick break. We're going to come back with Jake McCauley and chat some more. If you have questions or comments or anything else, and it is Sunday afternoon, jump online with us, wethepeopleradio.us. I think God is one of us, but I just want to say, from my point of view, I hope he votes more than once in an election next year. I'm all up for that kind of voter fraud. Go God! He can save us. Jake, back to you. Oh no. Did something bad happen to Jake?
No, I think.
Jake, are you?
No, I'm still here. Oh. I apologize.
He's just in awe of you.
During the War of Resistance, Thomas Jefferson and also John Adams, one of the rally cries was, "No king but King Jesus," because of his justice. So anyway, that just reminded me of that when you said if God would vote. And, you know, God has given us all the tools that we need. And going back to before we were on the last break, John Adams also said that our Constitution was made for a moral and a religious people. It is wholly inadequate. It's just that piece of paper in the archives building without that kind of people to enforce or to walk it out.
And, you know, that's what we're seeing. I mean, people are so, you know, it's like, why doesn't somebody do something? Well, when you sit down and you look at the actual constitutional remedies to an executive branch that disregards the rule of law, disregards the Constitution, our Constitution wasn't written with a, you know, with a ripcord we could pull to say, oh, wait a minute, we got the wrong guy in the, you know, in the big chair.
Yeah.
Just wasn't made that way.
Well, you know, another thing is, too, is judicial activism. I know you all have experienced that in California.
Yes.
You know, Congress has the authority to limit all appellate jurisdiction. Congress could literally say, okay, courts, anything that has to do with prayer and states, you know, states having nativity scenes on their front lawn or Ten Commandments posted, Congress could literally make the law that the Supreme Court could not rule on those instances. It would be left to the states, but they don't.
Well, so at this particular moment, though, how is Congress going to do that? Because nobody works alone. Congress is the House plus the Senate, signed by the President.
Yep.
So without 60 votes in the Senate, I mean, majority doesn't do you any good if everything goes down in flames.
But that gets down to the people again. Are we going to be apathetic, or are we going to work hard for liberty?
Oh, exactly.
You're on the radio on Sundays because you want to work hard for liberty.
Exactly. I think folks just need to realize, though. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that. They think, well, you know, the Republicans have a majority in the Senate. Why can't they get all this stuff through? And a lot of people are unfamiliar with exactly how laws are passed. And there has to be... You can have majority. Majority's great. That allows you to bring up bills. And it allows you to set the calendar... there are a lot of good things that happen with majority and bad things the other way. But, you know, at the end of the day, the president's got to sign the law, so you got to get it through the process.
Mm-hmm.
Super frustrating.
It seems to me that comes down to the lack of education. That's why we started theamericanview.com or the Institute on the Constitution. The reason is because we saw that there was just, you know, for instance, myself, I became a Christian when I was 18 and been a counterculture kid, kicked out of school as a senior, been in treatment numerous times. Finally went to a place called Teen Challenge where they offered me the Bible and Christianity, and that was where I was converted, and I didn't turn back to the old stuff anymore. But then I started winning people to the Lord, you know, and being kind of evangelical, going to schools, sharing with youth my testimony, going to treatment centers, etc. And I had never even voted because I thought the government was just bad. You know, it's bad politics. That's not Christianity. That's where evil people go to get power and rich and things like that. And it wasn't until I took the course that I now talk about and travel all over the country and teach that my eyes were open to the fact that, hold on a second, God is the source of my rights, and God created laws to protect my rights. And that's the government's job, the rule of law.
Sure. And if you don't participate in it,
that's right.
Then because that happened, we saw that the last election, the evangelical bloc basically stayed home for the most part.
They weren't excited about the candidate, and I think that's another thing too. We're looking to somebody else to do it. Maybe we're the candidate in a lot of regards. And there's so much that people can do locally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to be coming to town in October. Is it the 18th, I believe, and going through the. October 12th. I'm going to be in Reading at the tea party there, and then on throughout that week into the next week. I think we end at Sutter Buttes the following Monday. I think my schedule is right on your website. But these are things we're going to be talking about.
Yep, you're here from, let's see, hold on. You go from October 12th through October the 19th, actually, that whole week in California, and that is at the very bottom of the page at wethepeopleradio.us.
I think we even go into the next week, too. I'm going to be at a church in Lodi on Sunday and
send me
Monday
that.
At the Sutter Buttes. We'll do. I'll give you the rest of that information.
Because I only have
a couple people call since.
Yeah, I've got the 12th through the 19th. And do I have... Oh, and I have your email on there. So if people have any questions, theamericanview.com is posted. Your Facebook and Twitter pages and stuff are on there. So people have no excuse for not being able to find you. Do you travel all over the country?
Amen. Yes, I do. As I said, right now I'm in North Carolina. I'm going to. I just got back from Maryland. But yes, we're traveling in all 50 states. We have people that have graduated our courses of instruction in all 50 states, and it's eye opening. And once you get your eyes open to see that this isn't how it has to be, and here's my role to play in it, you can make some changes. We're seeing a lot of changes done on local levels, where local governments are saying, hey, thanks anyway, state government, but we're not going to have that in our county. Or thanks anyway, Obama, but that's not coming into this county. And that's important. There's a great deal of power on the local jurisdictions, a great deal of power with sheriffs and county councils. We don't identify these things. We just think, wow, this train's going over the cliff. Nothing I can do to stop it, so I'm just going to get mine. And I think it's a very un-American attitude. If our founders would have thought that, George Washington only had 3% of the population in his colonial army. 3%.
Isn't that crazy?
It is crazy, but it shows divine providence will stand with those that are willing to stand with God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I look. That's where I get my confidence. Whether I win, lose, at least I can see people's lives turned around, lives changed, and application of these principles. Because there's really only two ways that a nation is governed. You're governed from a pagan view of government,
And when I say pagan, I mean non-religious, no authority given to God or no recognition of a God. Well, if that's the case, then guess who becomes God? The government.
Mm-hmm.
Because the government has to, because they have the most guns, they have the most money, and they have the most muscle. And if the government is God, you can't limit their jurisdiction and authority. Who's going to tell the king? You're going to lose your head. Well, that is going to result in tyranny. And why is that going to result in tyranny? Because power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's why we have checks and balances. Nobody has absolute power. Nobody's supposed to. Sometimes it's usurped by the courts, sometimes by the guy who said he has a pen and a cell phone. That's not how it's supposed to work. That's based off an evolution system, too, by the way. It doesn't say in the Declaration of Independence, but we hold these truths, that all men have evolved equal. The quote-unquote theory, some people call it science, of evolution is very dangerous. The Declaration says we believe that all men are created equal by our Creator. And He's divine. And He divinely ordained government to do what? To protect our rights. We already talked about how Jesus limited government when He said, give to Caesar what's Caesar's, Romans 13. But He said, give to God what is God's. In other words, everything doesn't belong to Caesar. So He limits that. That results in a republic where the law is king. And even the rulers are subservient to the law.
That's becoming a novel idea of late.
Yes. And gosh, you know, all these things are there in the archives. You've got to dust them up and read up on them, sharpen our chops. That's why you need to come to the events when we're out there in California. That's why you need to listen to shows that talk about these things like yours. And that's how we get an educated, you know, citizenry. But I think so many people are so concerned about the football game and who's thinking the hole and the little ball and the golf and things like that. Nothing wrong with sports or athletics, but we become so consumed with that entertainment culture that we're letting all this stuff kind of go to the wayside.
Well, when you look at how many people are angry about the way our government is run and who's running it, but then you look at the percentage of people that show up
to vote. Yeah.
I mean, you're looking at 25 or 27% of the people show up to vote, and that's where you end up with these local governments that literally have all the power being occupied by a bunch of nut jobs because people don't get out and do their part
you
and
also
elect
have
people that know what's happening.
Well, and that is fueled by and actually backfeeds into just misinformation. You know, a lot of people think, well, my vote for local, I mean, how many times do you hear this? I vote for the local people, but the presidential election doesn't matter. You know, they're all crooked, so they're all the same, therefore it doesn't affect me. And yet, most people, their negative interaction with the government happens through the bureaucracy, whether it's IRS or even on a state
EPA
level. Yeah, Fish and Game, yeah. EPA, Fish and Wildlife. All those agencies are executive branch agencies. The person that heads up the executive branch, whether it's the governor in your state or the president in the country, appoints the heads of all those bureaucracies. That's where the accountability is. People turn to Congress to make those people accountable, but all they do is fund. They don't get to hire and fire them. I think sometimes people have a skewed view of the division of labor.
Well, in the division of power, what you're expressing, that is, there is truth to that. However, I want to say that Congress has a very big stick.
Yeah, they do.
So they can limit these jurisdictions, but again, you need the cooperation of each. And we originally had separation of powers. It wasn't a bad thing that the Senate and the House didn't get along because they didn't need to get a lot of stuff done. Matter of fact, Thomas Jefferson was known to send them home early. He said, because if you sit around here for too long, you'll figure out something to do. And every time government does something, there goes some of our liberties.
It is kind of funny because people will say, well, this Congress is unproductive because it hasn't made very many laws. And I always think,
that's beautiful.
I'm like, thank God, you know? I mean, are you kidding me? Be happy. And the complexion is totally different. The House can, right now, the House can pass conservative legislation all day long. But without six people willing to cross the line in the Senate, it either wanders around and dies or it just doesn't get brought up.
Don't you feel they still should, though, because it puts it in the public debate? I mean, that's the excuse about impeachment. Oh, we can't impeach him. Senate will never vote to remove him.
I always,
if you impeach him,
I think it sends a good signal to the people that this is part of the political process. This can happen. This does exist. I don't think that's a bad thing.
I guess my thought on that is split, because on the one hand, I think, yes, it does send a good signal, but in reality, you have such a huge percentage of people that don't know that you need the Senate to complete the impeachment process, that you would have a gigantic block of people who would be thrilled that this was taking place, and then when you basically told them you were doing something that couldn't be completed, they'd be really mad.
I mean, well, who would they be mad?
Well, they'd just be mad that they wasted the time and got them all excited for nothing.
Well, I kind of get what you're saying. I mean, I
always wonder about that.
But at the same token, when Bill Clinton was impeached, he literally was impeached. The House brings up the articles of impeachment, and they impeached him. It went to Senate to be tried, and Senate will then remove whomever it is. No president has ever been removed.
Right.
Only some federal judges have. But his behavior was completely different after he was impeached and he went through all that scrutiny in the papers. I mean, did anybody else notice it? We weren't looking at, Obama is not Bill Clinton incarnate. Bill Clinton seems rather conservative, almost more conservative than George W. Bush in his second term in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's kind of scary, isn't it?
He was checked, and that's why. And so that check, I think, whether or not it comes through, it's still a discipline measure. And you know what? If we're not going to do it, then we might as well say government belongs to them, and we're just the pawns, and continue making money and live it for as long as we can.
And live with the consequences.
Well, do you actually think Obama would care? I mean, do you think it would really actually make a difference in his, all of it, in the overreach? Because I don't really think it would. I don't think he cares.
I don't know. Let's
I mean, we're guessing, but, you know, just opinion.
Each president is a man. There's a sense of individuality. They are a created person. God has created them with a conscience. They understand right and wrong. And I don't know him personally, so I couldn't speak. I've seen a lot of his policy, but most of what we see is what's on the papers. It would appear that people could understand with what you're saying, but I don't know that any president wants to go down on their record as being a president that was impeached. I think that's a big blemish, and I think that would mean something to him.
Yeah, he is kind of about his legacy to a point. But gosh, you know, look at the things, how incredibly unpopular they are, and it's like they just march on. And if you say it enough times, it'll make it true, you know? We're in sort of a crazy, uncharted water, I guess, as it were. Do we need to?
Well, in some regards, but history, this is kind of the historical pattern. You know, and this was the advantage to having the men that wrote the documents that we have. They had, you know, thousands of years of history to look to government systems that worked and failed, and why they worked, why they didn't fail, when they constructed our brand new government. And I think they did a very good job, and it's taken well over 200 years for it to get to this point.
True.
Which shows something was done right. And I think if we restore it, if we get back to the rules that currently exist, I think we got a good shot at seeing another 250 years of liberty, prosperity, and peace. But if we don't, you know, like any other empire, like John Adams said,
it flames out.
It's just a piece of paper. That's right.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
What do you find?
I don't want that to be my legacy, so that's why I do what I do.
Good for you. And we don't want to live that long either. I guess if it's going to happen, you know, do it later. Hey, tell me this. I would imagine you're very well received, besides the fact you're a nice guy. But, I mean, the idea of going out and teaching this, I would imagine people are very hungry for this. Or is that what you find around the country?
Absolutely. I was in a meeting yesterday, and I said to the people there, as I say to everybody, there is so much of a demand. And this isn't sensationalism. This literally is. And you could ask my wife about this. There's so much of a demand that I can't facilitate the demand of people that are hungry for this. No, that does not mean that there's not a lot of effort in this. It's not like I show up to town and thousands of people flock me. But there's thousands of people in thousands of towns. you know, there's ones, there's twos. I mean, the Committee of Correspondence was ones and twos and threes of people. Pretty soon there was the Tea Party. And after that, the Sons of Liberty kind of bolstered their political opinions. And then they were able to choose delegates to go to a Continental Congress. And, of course, the rest is history. So I can't facilitate that. We work with youth in public schools. We work with youth in private schools. And right now we're working in the homeschool market where they're taking our courses and teaching them as a civics course. And it's eye-opening. And it's fantastic because it shows kids, listen, there is a purpose in our history, and we might have to be the George Washingtons of this day to stand up for these values against tyranny that exists in our very midst right now. And so that's what I'm finding. And yes, you're right, there is a lot of people. And the more effective that we get, the more persecution comes, because there's certain men that don't want these principles, these fundamental principles, by the way, and these elementary principles taught or let out of the bag, because they're trying to socially engineer a new system. And that's kind of frightening if we think about it.
Do you think we got here because they basically don't teach the Constitution in our schools anymore?
I think that's a big part of it, but I think the first thing, Bill, and thank you for this question, the first thing that we did is when we abandoned our fidelity to our Creator. In other words, when religion just became go to church, you know, there's no real sanctity to marriage, you know, living with each other before you're married, et cetera, et cetera. And I know I'm going to step on some toes here. But when we looked at our covenant before our Creator and said it's not a big deal, then we started to worship government. Now government was the one that had to fix, you know, single-parent homes. Government had to fix joblessness. Government had to fix all these things that before the church did, because we're religious and immoral people. They loved each other. And you wouldn't have to coerce me to donate to my church. But now we've got an IRS that literally steals legal plunder, legal theft of companies, businesses, properties, wealth, etc., to finance a system. And it all started because we abandoned our God.
Yep.
Imagine if people were self-governed and they obeyed the Ten Commandments and they looked at that as important. We wouldn't need a huge, robust federal government because there would be very little lawlessness.
True. True. I mean, it, you know, and we've talked about this before because we do a lot of environmental issues just because we have so many where we are. And we've discussed before that biblically, you know, in a biblical worldview, God cast Satan out of heaven. He was the fallen angel, and Satan and the minions were supposed to capture souls here on earth and keep them from going to heaven. And, you know, really a great way to do that is to get them all to worship the earth. Or worship government, or both. I mean, worship things on the ground rather than God. And I think we have a wonderful recipe going on for that right now, and we're seeing the results.
You're right on the money. In Romans 1, if anybody reads that chapter, you'll see exactly what you just explained.
I never remember where it is.
Yeah, Romans 1. Worship the creation rather than the creator.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gives us up. He says, okay, if that's how you want it, go do it. How's that working out for us?
Well, that's the scary part, because I think that's exactly the road we've been on for quite some time, and it's starting to come home to roost now. So, you know, we've just got to get it turned around in the right direction. It's not going to happen overnight, but we've got to get it aimed in the right
direction. I think that most people want to do the right thing, and as long as they don't stay home and feel, you make them feel like they can make a difference. And so for that, we are incredibly grateful that you're willing to make the travels and make the contacts and make that happen.
And thank you for coming on today.
You got it. I'm grateful for your work, Bill and Aaron. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jake. We've been speaking with Jake McCauley from the Institute on the Constitution. You can find all of his information and his travel schedule, at least in the short term, here on WeThePeopleRadio.us.